Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. Despite the low unemployment rate and improving economy in North Carolina, not everyone is doing well this holiday season. In fact, thousands of our neighbors still struggle affording enough food for their families. News and Views talked with Cindy Sink of the Interfaith Food Shuttle in Raleigh about the efforts to address food insecurity.
Well, Cindy, thanks for being with us again on News and Views.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we know the economy has been really improving quite a bit over the last year, but there's still a number of North Carolina families that were hard hit by the Great Recession. They've not recovered. Talk to us a little bit about what the face of hunger looks like now in North Carolina.
You're absolutely right. We haven't recovered from the recession to pre-recession levels. Our numbers are basically about the same. What's a little bit alarming is in the area of childhood hunger. With a little bit of help from the Wake County Commissioners, we started getting more emphasis being put on school pantries. And it's one of those things, once you start, school pantries had been something that we've been doing for several years, but once we started inquiring into other schools that might want to do them, it's kind of like the floodgates opened. We will have doubled the number of school pantries that we're doing in the past 2 years. So we're at about 24 school pantries now. And it's the same story. It's like once we broach a school with the topic of that, they're like, oh, yeah, we've definitely got some kids who could benefit from that. You open the pantry, and then all of a sudden there's hundreds of people accessing the pantry. So we know that that's out there. And the school pantry concept, it is a way that the whole family can access food. And many times the school pantry has refrigeration, so that means you can do more produce, you can do protein, you can get a lot more variety. And, of course, that's a place that the whole family feels comfortable coming to.
Our listeners may be familiar with free and reduced breakfast and lunch at the school, but this is an opportunity for the students to get something in between those meals, take something home, and also for their families?
Yes, exactly. So the people may be really familiar with our Backpack Buddies program, and that is where a child takes a backpack that's filled with 6 meals for them to use over the weekend. And primarily that works in an elementary school environment where kids have their backpacks and we just drop that bag of food in discreetly. Usually it's a school counselor who has identified those children. They are on free and reduced lunch. Not every child who's on free and reduced lunch needs a weekend meal, but the school counselors know. They know the kids that are coming to school and not eating at night or not eating on the weekend. And those kids are getting those bags of food on the weekend. By the time a child gets to middle school and high school, that Backpack Buddies concept is not as welcoming, and the school pantry is a way that the whole family can get more food. The parent or guardian can come on campus when the pantry is open. The child can just swing by the pantry on the way home on their way home after school and pick up whatever they need. It's just much more accessible to have a school pantry.
And maybe a more realistic model. I remember Jill Buller, the co-founder of the Interfaith Food Shuttle, sharing with us before that some young people would come home with their backpacks, and often they would be sharing that with their siblings and other members of the family to get through the weekend.
There's no question. We know that. We absolutely have stories of that continuing, of children sharing with other siblings and sharing with their whole family. So it is a better model. It's important also from a choice standpoint, preserving the dignity of people who need food, being able to go in and find the food that they want and that is not only healthy, but is something that they will eat. So it's a concept that as soon as we started opening up our approach to establishing more in the Wake County Commissioners, provided some funding, as soon as we opened up the opportunity for it, schools really embraced it. And we have plans to expand our child hunger programs. In March, we'll be moving into a new warehouse, which will allow us to process more food. We hope to be up to 36 pantries in a few years. So, unfortunately, it speaks to the need. It's not getting any better. But fortunately, there is a concept that's working.
And the numbers are really astonishing. Almost 1 in 4 children in our state are facing hunger on a regular basis. And it's not just a matter of your stomach grumbling a little bit between meals. That really can impact the students' learning, right?
It's absolutely proven that when a child is not eating sufficiently. It does affect their brain development. It certainly affects their ability to pay attention. It's not hard to imagine how difficult it is to pay attention to what your teacher is saying when you're hungry. But when they're not paying attention, that leads to discipline problems. Discipline problems can lead to suspensions. There's all sorts of things that might be happening around that child that really the root cause of it is they're just hungry. But in addition to that, there is the brain development. There is limited brain development when kids are not getting the right nourishment that they need. So it's proven.
Ultimately, the root cause of hunger lies in poverty. We know that. What more should our policymakers be doing to help bridge this divide?
Well, that is something I really would like us to be talking more about. And it's a difficult subject because it's big and it's complex. But until we shift our attention or expand our attention from the individual to the system and the environment that that individual is operating in. We can feed that child, we can feed that family all day long, but if that family is going back into an environment where they aren't making a living wage, where they don't have the job skills to move up into a job that can afford to pay them, that gives them a high enough salary that they can afford to live, when they can't afford health care, when they can't afford where they live, then all we're doing is putting a Band-Aid. All we're doing is giving them a meal in that moment, but it's not fixing the system that they're living in. You know, if you look around, if you read anything, if you affordable housing is a tremendous impediment to low-income families. We know that health care is a tremendous obstacle for low-income families. So we've really got to look at the policies that are impacting the whole environment that people who are living in food security are living in.
And we know that folks who are receiving food stamps are now required to prove that they're working. Mm-hmm. They have to volunteer or take classes for 20 hours a week. We don't make it particularly easy on those that are in need.
And yet, SNAP is without question the most effective way to fight food insecurity. And 3/4 of the people who are owned food stamps are children and the elderly. We know that over half the people in households receiving SNAP do have at least one person working. These folks are struggling to make ends meet and make choices between their medications and paying the rent that day. And it's a very effective program. And I think it's a complicated thing for people to understand, our voters to understand the importance of putting pressure on our policymakers to not restrict SNAP. If SNAP gets reduced, there is no question that we won't have enough school pantries for the amount of children that will be hungry because they aren't able to access their SNAP benefits. And that's something that is going to be coming up in the first of 2018 in the Farm Bill. And I just encourage everyone to learn about it. Just get yourself educated about SNAP and call your congressman. Call your congressman. It makes a difference when you call.
Absolutely. That's important to look at the Farm Bill coming up in 2018 because that's definitely the SNAP benefits. One of the other things that the Interfaith Food Shuttle is working on is race equity. Talk to us a little bit about how that intersects with the work you're doing with hunger.
Yes, I've had the extreme good fortune to do 3 different trainings in race equity and the impact of racial oppression on the food system is one that I just completed. And I want to give a shout out to our friends at the Center for Environmental Farming Systems, CEFS for short. CEFS is made a commitment to conduct this training, and it's free training. And even though this was the third time that I had done this training, it's such an eye-opening experience. One of the things they do is put up a timeline through history of all the policies and practices and beliefs and social systems from the 1600s all the way to the 2000s, illustrating oppression on communities, on other ethnic cultures, on people of color, just all the different policies and practices that have been put in place for so long. What's unfortunate is that we're talking about policies that are into the 2000s. We think that we look back and we say, haven't we solved this with the civil rights movement? And we just haven't. We haven't. As late as the early 2000s, 1999, there was a Pigford versus the USDA won a $1.15 billion settlement for discriminatory practices, lending practices with a group of farmers, 400 farmers. So, you know, as late as the 2000s, we're trying to right these wrongs. And the impact on the food system is that food insecurity and poverty is disproportionately affecting communities of color. You know, today, what, 50 years after the Civil Rights Movement, blacks are making 57 cents on the dollar compared to whites, and Latinos are making 59 cents on the dollar compared to whites. There is inequity, and we have to look at the systems that have been in place for decades and the impact they're still having. If you have the opportunity to take that free training, I recommend it. All policymakers, all media, all people of influence who have a voice, like y'all have a voice, participate in that training so that there's a sensitivity to what has happened and moving forward, that we get diverse voices at the table. You know, diversity in nature is what works. And it also works with human beings. The more diverse the voices are at the tables where decisions are made, the more information you're going to have to make a better decision.
It's absolutely something that we want to learn more about. The Interfaith Food Shuttle has a saying underneath its logo, or incorporated with a logo, that is feed, teach, and grow. For our listeners that want to get involved and they want to learn a little bit more about how they can make a difference in hunger in our community, what can they do?
Yes, Feed, Teach, Grow is our motto, and I've already mentioned a lot of the programs that feed, Backpack Buddies, all of our child hunger programs, our mobile markets. Teaching is a big part of what we do. We teach people nutrition education, how to cook healthy, on a budget. We have a culinary job training program where we teach challenged adults, give them a job skill in the culinary field. We are teaching workforce readiness and culinary readiness to foster kids, kids who are aging out of the foster system, and we're teaching them how to cook for themselves and get ready to get out into the world. And we also teach people how to grow their own food. We have our Seed to Supper adult training, and we also have school in-school training for kids around growing food and learning where your food comes from. So when you donate to Interfaith Food Shuttle, it goes not only to feeding people in the moment, but also teaching people skills for self-sufficiency and raising that food IQ, you know, learning where your food comes from and the value of fresh food and how to prepare fresh food and how it can make you healthy. So if you're looking for a good place to put your money this year, I hope it'll be with Interfaith Food Shuttle. You go to foodshuttle.org. and donate. We'd appreciate that.
Lots of good work as we're talking about hunger this month. Cindy Sink is with the Interfaith Food Shuttle, and you can learn more about their organization at foodshuttle.org.
Thank you very much.
Up next, the struggles faced by young workers in North Carolina. Stay tuned.